the best democracy money can buy, the Election Crimes Report. This is Greg Palast with Dennis Bernstein reporting.
Welcome back to Flashpoint's weekly election crimes bulletin, the best democracy money can buy, with Greg Palast, now reporting for Rolling Stone. Greg, welcome back to Flashpoints. There has been a lot going on.
Yes.
We've got the announcement today that Hillary Clinton will not be indicted after the little visit that Bill had with the Attorney General. Ah, forget that. There is still some leftover results that we're trying to figure out in terms of what happened in California. And you've got a big event coming up, so there's a lot to talk about. Why don't we start back in California?
Okay. Back in California. I was reading the something called the Washington Post, which is like the American Izvestia. And it said, Greg Palast made a mistake because I had announced on your show, so we're infamous now, that 2 million ballots were not counted when they declared Hillary Clinton the winner in California with 100% of precincts reporting. In fact, there was 2 million ballots that were uncounted, according to the Secretary of State, on the night that CNN announced 100% results in. And that doesn't change, even if the Washington Post doubts it. And even today, we are now, Dennis, we are 1 month after the primary, and over 100,000 ballots have yet to be counted, provisional ballots, what we previously called placebo ballots, which have a danger of not being counted at all. I had also, I was attacked in the Washington Post. I'm not being defensive about this. I just want to correct the record, because I said on this show that the majority of the provisional ballots were likely, given the demographics, likely Bernie Sanders voters. And I was accused, I guess, of being the great Karnak and knowing how people voted without seeing their ballots. No, it's demographics. And in fact, of the provisional ballots which have now been counted, exactly 75.0%, 3 out of 4 ballots went for Bernie Sanders of those provisional ballots that they allowed to be counted. What is a provisional ballot? I'll just give you a quickie. Once again, it's very important nationwide. It's not some weird California hula hoop surfer thing. It's a nationwide disease. It is, since the Help America Vote Act was drafted by George Bush back in 2000 after the election was stolen in Florida, there was a way to try to allow people who are missing from the voter rolls, who've been wrongly purged and scrubbed like those black people we found in Florida, that you would have a chance still to vote provisionally and by affidavit. Now, you sign a legal affidavit that says, I have the right to vote, and if I'm wrong, I go to jail. They throw out a lot of those, actually on average about 36.5%, about a little more than 1 out of 3 of those provisional ballots are thrown out. If it's a tight race, they're almost all thrown out. So I call them placebo ballots because they make you think you voted when you haven't. They let you believe you voted. Now, I just want to straighten out one other thing for people. This is the Election Crimes Bulletin and Voter Protection Advice here. And we want to protect your ballot. Think of this podcast as your ballot condom. And so if you are given a so-called provisional ballot and they tell you it will be counted, number one, don't believe them. Number two, go to an election official, election polling judge, and demand the right to have a real ballot, or do like Carrie Harrison here at Pacifica in Los Angeles, who actually called the police on the local voting officials, who then switched his provisional ballot and gave him a real ballot. They literally had the cops come in and threatened to arrest the poll workers unless they gave him a ballot. Now, never, and in some cases in New York, people actually drove down the road to a courthouse to get a judge to order officials to give them real ballots to make sure if you don't get a real ballot and you get a provisional ballot, again, it's not that it may never get counted. 1 in 3 chance it won't be counted in a high-risk race. A majority chance it will not be counted. So you're really playing roulette with your ballot if you let them give you this so-called provisional ballot. This is really important. It's not minor, guys. It's like 3 million given out in the upcoming election, far more than the margins of victory. Supposedly Hillary Clinton initially won California by 400,000 votes. That margin officially has shrunk substantially. But it's far, the margin's far, far less than the number of provisional ballots which have been given out. And as I projected, 75% of those that get counted go to, for Sanders. If you count all the provisional ballots, all things equal, Bernie Sanders won. This is not a partisan statement. This is a statement. This is a statistical fact. So just be careful about your ballots, ladies and gentlemen. And this is how the system is operating. Please be careful in every state. Provisional ballots, they're never rejected. They're not rejected all the time. I don't want to say that. And never walk away from a polling station just saying, ah, forget it. I'm not, if all I can get is this placebo ballot, I'm just walking away. No matter what, you don't walk away. Fight it. If it's the only way you can vote, take it. That's why I also tell people to vote early, because then you have a chance, if you vote a week beforehand, to come back and not accept that provisional ballot, but get a, whatever documentation you need to vote correctly.
Well, that begs my next statement or question, which is how long do you have to wait for a vote count before it becomes irrelevant? You know what I mean? Like, how long did it take them to count the votes to figure out what happened in Britain?
Well, let's see. By 5 a.m. British time, they'd counted 37 million ballots. And in Britain, they announce when a ballot cannot be read or is rejected. They say, this ballot was rejected for this reason. At every precinct, you get it. And they're opened in public, usually in some school gym. Everyone's looking at the ballot. There are cameras there. There are all parties there. It's all public. And if you question that, say, hey, what about that ballot? You can go over and see that ballot. 37 million ballots counted within 24 hours. In California, we were waiting 1 month. This is Silicon Valley country, right? And we cannot figure out how to count a bunch of pieces of paper in over a month. Part of it is, it's not that they're trying to figure out how to count these things. That's easy. They're trying to figure out how not to count them, how many they can cut out, reject, and throw in the garbage. Let me tell you, if someone signs a piece of paper for a provisional ballot and says, I have the right to vote under penalty of law, I'm waiting to see them. If someone is lying about it, they should arrest them, not throw away their ballot under some cockamamie challenge. This is the problem here. We are not counting all the ballots in the United States. That's why it takes so long, over a month in California, as they figure out how many ballots they don't want to count. That's ugly. And when it gets down to the rest of the nation, the racist smell of the ballot rejection is heavy. I've mentioned before a figure you should burn into your soul, of America's dark soul, which is that if a ballot is thrown away as non-countable, the U.S. Civil Rights Commission says it's 900% more likely that voter is black than white. So it's an apartheid vote counting system. Everyone in America gets to vote, but not every color gets to have their vote counted.
All right. You are listening to the Election Crimes Bulletin. I'm Dennis Bernstein. We enjoy meeting with Greg Palast every week to see if we can create a structure to help you protect your vote and make sure it gets counted. Well, big announcement. Hillary Clinton is not going to be indicted, at least according to the FBI. I guess the Justice Department still has the possibility of indicting her. But in an unusual move preceded by the former President Clinton meeting with the Attorney General, a voluntary meeting in Washington on a Saturday, and then this announcement. But what does this have to do with voter protection? I mean, it's this is not about one candidate or another, but this is an important story, isn't it?
Very, because you know, people know Greg Palast, know me as the guy who's the author of The Best Democracy Money Can Buy and Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. There's a direct relation between vote rustling and billionaires buying up our polity. And what I'm very concerned with here, okay, we I guess America's moved to a new standard. Like, if you don't go to jail, you can run for president. I thought that maybe we'd have a little bit higher standard than that, but hey, that's up to the voting public. I'm not partisan on that, you know? The Hillary Clinton's emails, the discovery that she was basically hiding them, was because there were Freedom of Information Act requests for her documents from journalists like me. And what they wanted to do is tell us that these documents, that these emails, these subjects didn't exist. I was interested in finding out of Hillary Clinton's relationship to the dictatorship, the murderous dictatorship of Kazakhstan. Now, let's follow the money here. And this is a story reported by The Times, The New Yorker, And yes, a right-wing investigator named Peter Schweizer, who I find, you know, he may be right-wing, but he's a straightforward investigator. And I went to Kazakhstan to check out these stories, Seymour Hersh too. And we had a guy named Frank Giustra, who is a big resource magnate, and he gave $30 million to the Clinton Foundation, which he said was, he literally termed it an investment. Now, that's the Hillary, Bill, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation. And then Giustra flew to Kazakhstan and got the exclusive agreement to mine the uranium from Kazakhstan. This is when nuclear power was making an ugly little comeback, coming out of its crypt. Right after Giustra shows up, Bill Clinton shows up. This guy just got $30 million from Giustra. He shows up and he meets privately with the president of Kazakhstan. Okay, now, Hillary Clinton becomes Secretary of State. Seymour Hersh, myself, and others discovered that there was massive bribery paid by U.S. oil companies to the president of Kazakhstan, Nursultan Nazarbayev. And so a mobile executive went to prison for the bribery payments. But Nazarbayev himself, the president of Kazakhstan, who received the money, about $160 million in bribes, they don't come cheap, these oil potentates, $160 million in bribes. But his name was never mentioned in the indictment of the criminals of the bribers who went to jail. And rather, he was listed as something called KO2 or Kazakh Official 2. Now, why do we care about that? Because my inside sources at the Justice Department told me that that was arranged by Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State, that she sent her deputy to Kazakhstan and assured the dictator who, and by the way, you don't want to get on the wrong side of the dictator because journalists tend to end up dead in Kazakhstan for doing that. Nazarbayev said that anyone in his nation who mentions that he is subject of a bribery investigation or that he had taken bribes goes to prison, and they're lucky if they come back out with all their fingers on. So what Hillary Clinton did was by taking his name out of the indictment and just putting in those initials KO2, it may seem minor, but what that did is allowed this guy to clamp down, imprison, and torture journalists in his nation who would bring up the question of bribery from oil companies. Now, did Hillary Clinton do that to favor the oil companies, to stroke a bloodthirsty oil potentate in the Caspian Sea? Or did she do that to make sure that her foundation kept getting pleasured by Mr. Giustra? And I can tell you, having been in Kazakhstan and talked to the president, the dictator, and his daughter, who's the dictator in waiting, they understand how these things work. Gentlemen don't say, hey, I'm going to take care of you, Nursultan, and help you get rid of your enemies and evil journalists. Rather, they understand how the system works. She takes care of Nazarbayev, that is, Secretary Clinton took care of Nazarbayev's needs, and he took care of the Clinton's benefactors' needs. And that's how it works. And all I wanted to do was get the information, any emails between Hillary and her husband regarding this transaction. But according to Hillary Clinton, that's a personal message because it's to her husband. Well, it's not really to her husband. It's to her co-recipient of millions of dollars. They run a business together, basically, called the Clinton Foundation, and a political operation called the Clinton Campaign. And Hillary Clinton took it not only upon herself to withhold this information by putting it on a private server. And here's what really disturbs me, Dennis, is that when she was caught and told to turn over those emails, she took it upon herself to order the erasure of 56,000 emails. Now, if you did that, Dennis, if you were subject to a federal investigation and you erased the emails that were subject to that investigation, I guarantee you this broadcast would be from a federal prison. There's zero question. In fact, Comey, the FBI director, even said so. He kind of said a lower official would be in real trouble. He almost kind of gave a lèse majesté defense, saying, you know, well, the Secretary of State can kind of make up her own kind of rules. No, we are a nation of rules. Those documents were the public's documents, not hers. And she definitely erased documents of public interest to keep them out of the hands of journalists. It, you know, okay, if the standard is she's not going to jail, all right, I can agree or disagree with that. But I can tell you this, if that's what we're, is that what we're looking for? Is that what we want in an open administration?
Well, it's interesting, Greg. I don't know if that's what we want, but the corporate press really loves what's happened. They've helped to bring it about. Because they don't like to do difficult stories where Bernie Sanders, for instance, is talking about structural change and you really have to think about it. They want to go Trump for Clinton, you know, wow, we got you on this, we got you on that. You're a criminal. You know, we're here, you know, there's reverberations about a Trump rape case. I'm trying to figure out if there's any reality there, but this is what they thrive on. A real story, real information, economic meltdown, free trade, the relationship to free trade and what's going on in Mexico or in Honduras. These are issues that the press doesn't want to deal with. So we end up with what we've got. They've got their favorite election, probably the most fun they're going to have in the rest of their lives.
Well, you know, what disturbs me as a journalist and as an investigative reporter, I've read in the papers that, for example, the people, Judicial Watch, which is a right-wing group, and that they asked for this information about Clinton and the Clinton Foundation, the relationship with the dictators of the Caspian Sea and all these other matters. And the response of the mainstream press has been to say, this is a right-wing group. Well, I'm sorry if our American press is being shamed by a right-wing group. Why wasn't the Los Angeles Times asking for this information, right? Why wasn't the Washington Post asking for this information as opposed to running articles about Greg Palast and questioning my numbers? Well, they can question my numbers, but it'd be nice if they actually looked at my numbers. But we used to have investigative reporting in the United States. Instead, we now have the attack was on literally the investigative reporter, even though he's right wing. It's just like saying, oh, Greg Palast tends to be with progressives, so let's discount him. It's about the facts, about hiding material from these are public emails. They're not her stuff. It's not her private stuff when she talks about a dictator and her husband when they're making millions of dollars off these transactions. And by the way, it's not all for their foundation. Bill Clinton also got $500,000 from Nazarbayev himself for a talk. Now, that's pretty golden words. And I wonder if it has something to do with the fact when he got this $500,000, Bill Clinton, from Nazarbayev. Was that something to do with the fact that Nazarbayev's name was left off the indictments? And we need to know, and it can't really be up to federal officials, whether it's Hillary Clinton or anyone else, to simply erase the emails at question. I'm telling you, if there's ever a definition, I don't know what obstruction of justice means anymore, if that ain't it.
Well, we're going to hear a lot more about that from a very fine attorney on Flashpoints today. We're going to get into the specifics. But, Greg, I know that you're excited. You've got a screening for the new film you're working on, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. It's happening in St. Louis at the Netroots Nation gathering. You want to talk about that? What's going on? And what is Netroots Nation, by the way?
It's a gathering of, I don't know, I'm not that hip. I'm too old to understand. It's the gathering of the kind of website media and activist groups that are media web-based, Netroots Nation. It's a well-known decades-long gathering. But the important thing is that we're doing a sneak preview screening of The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, A Tale of Billionaires and Ballot Ban. It's all about vote theft, the billionaires, the guys you've heard before, like the billionaire that people don't know about behind Donald Trump, because Trump ain't a billionaire, so someone's got to put up the money. The vulture, and of course we've got. I was just looking today at our little Koch brothers investigation. Guys, I've been on the trail of for 40 years now. That's going to be, by the way, 6 p.m. on Saturday, July 16. If you're at Netroots, there's no charge, and we're working it out so members of the public can come later. We will, of course, make a lot of this material available at www.gregpalace.com, pieces of the film, because the important thing is not that we have a nice film, which is, it's fun to have a really good film, a good movie, and we've got Willie Nelson in there and Rosario Dawson, don't ask. we'll be releasing pieces of it. The main thing is to make sure that people, that the alarm goes out, that there are billionaires and ballot bandits ready to snatch the 2016 election. This is not a partisan matter, but I'll tell you, it is a civil rights matter. And so come and we'll have some fun and eat some popcorn watching the dissolution of that thing that used to be called American democracy.
All right. People can go to gregpalace.com if they want to find out more about that. They can hear the bulletin there or on flashpoints.net. Greg Palast, as always, we appreciate you joining us every week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Gotcha, Dennis. Thanks.
You've been listening to The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, the Election Crimes Report, with Dennis Bernstein, and this is Greg Palast reporting. For more information, go to www.gregpalast.com.